We
are.
We
are.
We are Cultivate.
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 We are Cultivate.
It's the most festive time of the year, a time for fun, family, and friends. A time when we all eat a little bit too much, get a little bit tipsy, and exchange presents with our loved ones. But what happens when the holiday season also becomes a time for murder? Join us as we count down the 12 murders of Christmas. Ho, 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 and happy holidays, you horror house hotties, and welcome to our hopefully somewhat festive episode. I'm Amy.
I'm Tom.
And we would love to take this opportunity to not only thank you so, so much for being here, because obviously we're always very appreciative that you're here, but also to wish you a very Merry Christmas, because it's Christmas time, and I love Christmas time. It's my second favourite time of the year. Dom, how are you? Are you feeling festive?
I am feeling holly jolly.
Nice. Lucky Holly.
Lucky Holly.
Oh, unfortunate holly. Name.
There is no Holly, by the way, people, just in case everyone is like, who's Holly? There is no Holly.
You should outline 100% that there's no Holly.
Yeah. There is no Holly.
The Hollies get offended.
Holly doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, Holly's Sorry. Everywhere.
You should have just kept it going.
But no, I'm good.
Like a fictional Holly that we always talk about and no one ever knows who it is.
That's true. Maybe her and Detective McClue can have a relationship.
Yeah.
They have Holly and McClue.
Festive, murderous babies together.
Festive, murderous babies. Also, nothing says... Christmas more than murder. That's
true.
Just par for the course here at Horror House. Nothing says festive joy more than murder.
I think murder crosses all of our minds at Christmas, really. Like, if we're being 100% honest with ourselves and we're stuck indoors with our families, we're all sitting there a bit like,
yeah,
could just kill all of you and this will be over.
True.
Or is that just me?
True. No. I think that is a lot of people, to be honest.
I think so.
I think that's a lot of people.
I mean, if this episode's anything to go by, it's quite a lot of people.
And also, as it's going to be potentially Christmas when people do listen to this, because it's going to be released a few days before Christmas, Merry Christmas if you're listening to this after Christmas or on Christmas. Maybe on Christmas Day, you want to hear some... you know, murder, because why not? Why not?
Why would you not want to spend Christmas with us? And you better be drunk.
Exactly.
If you're not drunk, if this is Christmas Day, you're listening to us and you're not drunk, why are you not drunk?
Exactly.
That's all I have to say.
Exactly. Get that eggnog down your gullet. Don't actually, because eggnog's disgusting. If you're drinking that, then there's something wrong with it.
That's like the worst choice.
Don't do that. Bucks Fizz.
Yeah.
That's what
Bucks Fizz is good.
Bucks Fizz.
Get that Bucks Fizz down in the morning. So this is like me and my this is going to make us sound like a family of alcoholics, but not at all. But me and my dad have like a very set regime of drinking across Christmas Day. So we start the day with Bucks Fizz, because obviously it's a morning drink. It's a mimosa, basically. So, you know, you do that in the morning. And then about mid-morning, just before lunch, we'll have a Bloody Mary, because, you know, it's the brunch drink of choice. Set you up. And then obviously with Christmas lunch, we'll have wine, because, you know, Christmas. And then in the evenings, we have a gin and tonic, and then we cap it all off in the evening with a whiskey. That's our regimen of drinking across the day, me and my dad. My mum does not join in at all, other than she has a glass of wine with dinner. And while she's cooking Christmas dinner, she'll have a glass of sherry, which I every year have to get her. Like, that's the rule.
Fair enough.
I don't know why.
Fair enough.
Don't know why we have such strict drinking rules on Christmas, but that's how it works.
It's a Chad Bolt family tradition.
It is.
You got to keep going.
Yeah, my parents encouraging me to drink heavily is quite the tradition.
I mean, your lineage is Scottish, so it's not entirely shocking.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't do at least those few drinks. And I say that like I'm having just one of each. It's not the case. It's like three or four of each. Yeah, I'm seeing Boxing Day with a wicked hangover.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Also good news, this is entirely non-podcast related, but if you're a theme park buff and you've seen the news, there is some pretty cool news. Saw it yesterday that Comcast, which is like the parent company of Universal, have bought 500 acres of land just outside of London, and they're potentially looking at the feasibility of doing a Universal Studios park in the UK, which is pretty fucking cool.
Very, very exciting news. Oh, I think, to be honest, we'll be lucky if we're young enough by the time it's finished to enjoy it properly, but exciting nonetheless.
I mean, I saw that, like, if it does go ahead, I think I saw 2030 would when hypothetically it would open. So
that's not too bad.
So we're not going to be that old.
No, I'll only be... Nope, don't need to talk about that. Immediately regret starting that sentence. I'll definitely still be okay.
6 years older than you are.
Correct. Yes. Be just out of my teens.
But yeah, very exciting, because as much as I would love to go back to Universal Studios Orlando to be able to hop to Bedfordshire, I think it's in Bedfordshire, that it will be a far easier, far, far easier.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a
plus. More theme parks isn't a bad thing. So,
never.
Very exciting news. But yeah, that was entirely non-podcast related. But for those who don't know, Universal Studios United Kingdom might be a thing. Who would have thought?
Yeah, although judging by our top five listening countries, then this news is apparently only exciting for us. So UK listeners, exciting stuff. Everywhere else, we're just trying to catch up. Are you ready to hear about the 12 murders/crimes of Christmas?
Yes, absolutely. Let's get Christmassy.
Apparently really easy to find. I was a bit concerned when I suggested the idea that I wasn't going to be able to find 12 good murders that happened in or around Christmas. But actually, apparently, it's a very popular time to kill people. So it wasn't as difficult as I expected. Before we dive in,
Do you know why it's easy to kill people?
People hate their presents.
Amy? Because people hate their presents. But also, when you've had four plates of food, it's quite difficult to outrun someone who would want to kill you.
Oh, yeah, no, that's true. I was thinking more when I've had four plates of food and you're trying to ask me a logical question, I'm going to get angry pretty quick. I'm focusing 100% on digestion at that point, so it's unwise to... And I've probably got a knife in my hand because I'm probably still eating or, like, you know, cutting cheese or something. So very quickly, a bit of a shout out for our friends over at Tutjig. Their Christmas special is out now. And they did a quiz for theirs, and I scored ridiculously well on it. But partly because their first round was about Christmas murders, all three of which I cover in this episode. So maybe we released the episodes the wrong way around. Maybe they should have heard this before doing their quiz, because they were appallingly bad at it. No offense, boys. It's just rubbish. But very good episode. So Horror House listeners, go check out Tutjig. We'll put a link where. But yes, 12 Murders of Christmas. And we are starting with one that is hopefully familiar to everyone here, to everyone in the room, and to everyone listening or watching on YouTube, because I covered it a few episodes ago. I say a few, it's probably about 20 now, but whatever. And that is the case of JonBenet Ramsey.
Yes. I remember.
I was waiting for you to recognize 20 episodes. What I was talking about.
When you were like 20 episodes ago, I was like, well, not remembering that.
That information's long gone. I don't think it was 20 episodes ago. It wasn't that long ago, but it is one that we've covered. and one that was covered in the Christmas quiz on Top Jig, which is why I knew it. So yes, JonBenet Ramsey, the infamous child beauty queen murder that still haunts America two decades on. In fact, I think very recently they even said that a new suspect had come forward and claimed responsibility. So it's still very much ongoing. It still, you know, crops up every now and again. JonBenet Ramsey's murder between Christmas Day and Boxing Day in 1996. Obviously, police couldn't confirm 100% if it was Christmas Day or Boxing Day, because no one really knows at what point she died. Caused an enormous storm across America and the wider world. 22 years on, and the six-year-old callous killer, or killers, still haven't been identified. True crime buffs all over the world have studied and obsessed over the case of the young girl killed apparently during a botched kidnapping. I don't know if you remember much about the case, Dom, but it was, she was found in the basement of her family home with ligatures around her neck, and it looked like someone had tried to take her. There was a broken window. But that was basically it. Not really very many other clues.
No.
Countless documentaries, movies, books, and articles all point fingers, but the mystery remains unsolved to this day. Many people still accuse JonBenet's parents, and some look at her older brother, who, if you remember, was up with her in the middle of the night that night, and gave her a snack. I don't know if you remember that part of the story, but some people obviously look to him as the last person to see her alive. There's also accusations of her having a stalker, and local child molesters, you know, obviously somewhat understandably, have been accused of potentially kidnapping her and have all been treated with suspicion. In fact, very few people in Boulder, Colorado, where she lived, have evaded suspicion. The police questioned thousands of people over the course of many years, because they really just didn't have too many leads, and were hoping to find in that way. Perhaps, though, the eeriest suspect, and one that draws us quite well, I feel, into our current theme for this episode, is that of Bill McReynolds, who was a local man hired by the Ramseys to play Santa Claus at a large party held at the Rich family's house that year. McReynolds died in 2002, swearing his innocence, and it's the case that maybe till this day will never be solved. So the only question really is, did Santa do it? Was he the guilty one?
Was it Father Christmas? Was it him? Was it jolly old Saint Nick? I mean, I do remember that when we did the episode, that you mentioned that someone was able to, like, obviously get in the house and then sit in the kitchen and write an absolute 2,000 word dissertation. And I mean, Santa could have done that. Santa could have come down, you know.
Santa's been like, forgetting a lot of shit done in one night.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Right. He was like, I'm going to munch on the cookies. I'm going to get me some milk. I'm going to write me a ransom letter. That's
how it works.
Plan of action for the Ramsey house.
I mean, when you put it like that, if he had elves to help him, this has taken a dark turn. Basically, I'm accusing Santa and his elves of killing a kid. And we're like 10 minutes into the episode.
Damn,
so
you,
brilliant.
Father Christmas.
Great news. Sorry, everyone. I said I was feeling festive, and now I've just, you know, dissed Santa. I'm sure he doesn't kill kids. He gives presents to the kids. And if there's any kids listening, please turn this off. What are you doing here? Just
just
leave.
I was about to be like, why are you listening to this if you're under the age of 21?
I mean, 21's probably safe, but if you're absolutely under the age of 18, you need to go away, and definitely don't listen to last week's episode. Jesus Christ!
Oh God,
it's not a good idea for anyone.
Oh no!
So JonBenet Ramsey is our first case of Christmas murder. Our second case.
What a case to start off.
I know, right? It's a big one. A little bit closer to home, for me and you, Dom. It was in Edinburgh. Edinburgh woman stabs neighbour 29 times over Christmas present dispute.
What? Oh my lord, I mean, present was this? Oh my
it
lord.
Seems excessive. 29 times is a lot. You know what I'm like when it comes to the logistics of killing. I get hung up on the small things. And I think after like maybe two or three stabs, you can be quite certain that you've done damage and you could potentially be quite certain that they're dead.
Yeah.
29 seems excessive and very tiring.
Yeah, you got to have some stamina to stab someone 29 times, don't you?
Exactly.
And it
I
is a bit
be on top for that one.
Pardon the pun, but it is a bit overkill, isn't it? Oh dear, Amy.
Exactly. So yeah, Edinburgh woman stabs neighbour 29 times over Christmas present dispute. Murdered for not liking a gift enough. Well, that was the case with 37-year-old Melissa Young. That was the excuse that 37-year-old Melissa Young gave police when she was arrested for the brutal killing of her next-door neighbour, Alan Williamson, on Christmas Day in 2013. Young later claimed diminished responsibility and that mental health issues were behind the sustained attack. But at the time, what she immediately told police was that her motive was given as rage due to Williamson dismissively rejecting her Christmas present of a pair of unisex trainers and a copy of the Sun's newspaper's slightly raunchy 2014 calendar.
I thought you were about to say a gift of unisex shoes and the Sun newspaper, and then I was like, I kind of understand why she killed her.
I mean...
Unisex
trainers is a bit confusing. To give your neighbour...
Yeah, that's a bit strange.
If you've ever given a gift to someone and they've kind of seemed unappreciative, it isn't nice. It's not a nice feeling.
No.
But I can't say that I've ever wanted to kill someone over it. There's a part of me that's like, well, can you give it back then, you prick? But...
Yeah.
Sorry, that came from an internal hatred, as you might have guessed. I wasn't like, oh God, no, I'm going to kill you. That just seems excessive. But also, how much thought have you put into unisex trainers and a titty calendar?
True. If I was the person getting the titty calendar, I wouldn't be too upset. Like, I'd maybe show a bit more appreciation for that. But the unisex trainers is a bit odd. It's a bit strange.
Yeah, who doesn't love Christmas titties? Young pleaded guilty to culpable homicide in 2014 and was sentenced to a minimum of 20 years. Since being jailed at the women's prison HMP Quantum Vale in Stirling, she has seriously assaulted two female prison officers. So I think she's just got a bit of an anger problem.
Did they not like their unisex shoes either?
No, they did not. They did not appreciate that page three had ended.
No.
Actually, I don't know if it would have done. I can't remember when page three ended. It was a sad day for all of us. But yeah, maybe it ended in 2014 and that's why they were upset.
Yeah. She went to the guard like, here's your present. And it was like unisex shoes and a page three cock calendar. And then they were like, oh, yay, thank you. And then she was like, you don't like it, do you? You don't like it. And then fucking... lost their shit.
That's literally her criteria of how to make friends. Do they like unisex shoes and porn calendars? And if they don't, then it's a no-go.
Oh, dear.
Case number three. The first and last family photograph the Lawsons would ever have taken. North Carolina tobacco farmer Charles Davis Lawson made his wife Fanny, don't laugh, I see you, don't, and their seven children put on their Sunday best for Christmas Day morning 1929. For they were to go into town and have a professional family photograph taken, a rare treat for such a poor family. It's nice that they can make an event out of it, but yeah, a little treat. Later that day, after settling in back home, Charles would set about methodically beating and shooting his wife, along with six of the seven children, until they were dead.
Oh, okay. I feel like we've skipped a few steps.
did I do that thing again? Yeah. Where I just spring something? Yeah.
A little bit.
My bad.
Was that for last week when I sprang about a million terrible things that you weren't aware of?
Yeah, I just like seeing the shock on your face. Like, if I was ever reading you my shopping list, I'd probably be like, okay, so I need milk, eggs, bread, cheese, anal lube, courgettes. And I, you know, I just want to, see the surprise. That's all. I just like it. You'll be glad to know, though, dear. Dom, that Lawson did spare one of the children. His eldest, 16-year-old Arthur, who he sent out on a needless errand just before his vicious massacre. We don't know why he chose to not kill that child, because we don't really know why he chose to kill any of them. Yeah. Charles Lawson's motive was never determined. Our next case is that of Stagger Lee, who apparently has a folk song about him, but I've not heard it. Maybe, I think it's an American thing, so maybe our American listeners will be familiar with it. But okay. Lee Shelton was a known criminal and pimp who went by the nickname Stagger Lee. Famous now because of the folk song he would inspire. There you go. I don't know it. Can't be that famous, but whatever. Shelton wasn't a man to be trifled with, as William Billy Lyons would discover to his cost. This murder took place on Christmas night, 1895, in St. Louis, Missouri. Stagger and Billy were drinking and playing cards together in the Bill Curtis Saloon when, wouldn't you know it, they got into a dispute. Lyons snatched Stagger's Stetson, which is really hard to say when you've got a bit of lisp. Lyons snatched Stagger's Stetson hat and, well, yeah, I mean, you don't take a cowboy's hat, basically.
No, no, you don't.
Stagger Lee drew his gun, shot Lyons dead in the head, and the rest is history.
Dang.
Happy Christmas.
You don't tug on Superman's cape and you don't steal a cowboy's hat.
You wouldn't steal a succulent Chinese meal. Wait, what? I think I've lost track of what we're talking about.
I saw that. Like, obviously, I've seen it before, but every so often I'll come across it, and it's a joyful experience every time. Get your hands off my penis!
Yeah, that was a short and sweet one. But yeah, I mean, don't touch his hat or he'll shoot you in the head. I think that's a fair response, right?
Yeah.
Everyone knows that don't like my unisex shoes and calendar, I'll stab you 29 times. Touch my hat, I'll shoot you in the head. These are just basic human rules that we all live by.
They didn't call it the Wild West for nothing.
It is wild. And as far as I'm aware, in the West. Next up, number 4? Actually, I've lost track. What number is this? I think it's number 4.
I think we're 4.
Let's go with number 4. Number 4 in our 12 days of Christmas murder is the Santa Suit Slaughter. I don't know why I've given myself so many titles that all begin with S. I've literally got a list that I work very hard to disguise, but I've been an idiot. I really have. We'll go with it. The Santa Suit Slaughter. It was Christmas Eve of 2004 in the small city of Covina. I think that is. Covina?
Yeah.
Just outside of LA.
Covina.
Parties were dominating the neighborhood, obviously, on Christmas Eve, Christmas party. 1129 East Knollcrest Drive had around 25 close friends and family enjoying each other's company, which sounds... at around 11:30 p.m., a knock at the door came. Standing on the other side of the door was Santa Claus. Aww.
That's cute.
That's cute.
It's probably not going to end cute, but
that's a good nice time. For now. He wanted to come visit. Or at least that's what the 8-year-old girl who answered the door thought. But unfortunately, it wasn't jolly old Kris Kringle. It was not Saint Nick. It was a man called Bruce Jeffrey Pardo, the unstable and violent ex-husband of one of the women at the party. He was holding a 9mm pistol in one hand and a flamethrower in the other. He had a further 3 handguns in his possession. Cruelly and methodically, he went about shooting everyone in his sight before setting a light to the house. 9 people would die and 3 would be badly injured. Pardo left and drove into his brother's house some 30 miles away. He had also planned to detonate a series of handmade explosives and then make his escape to Canada. But the fire had caused his Santa suit to melt onto him, causing severe third-degree burns, which doesn't sound fun. In fact, it wasn't fun, and we know this because rather than trying to escape, instead, Pardo decided to put in his head. So, yikes. Merry Christmas, everyone!
Yikes.
Yeah.
He sounds like a very normal person.
Mentally stable.
No.
Absolutely.
No instabilities at all.
Can you imagine that poor kid opening the door, seeing Santa Claus and being like, oh my God, it's Christmas. Santa's here. This is amazing. And then all of a sudden you notice that he's holding a fucking flamethrower.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. That's wild. I don't know
it's
how I've heard that.
Isn't it?
That's insane. Oh
it's
my
pretty
God.
Mental. It was one I'd heard of and I definitely needed to include because I think it's just...
Jesus.
It's one of the more extreme Christmas murders, I think.
Yeah. If, like, I don't know if he was pining after his ex or something. Like, you're not going to win her back by flamethrowering, people and shooting people, mate.
It's a mate's house.
Jesus.
Chill out.
Christ.
Although, not the only person that's decided to, murder people on Christmas. Because we've got seven more to go. December 28, 1987. Ronald Gene Simmons, not to be confused with Gene Simmons of Kiss.
Oh, not Gene.
No,
oh, no.
Not that Gene Simmons. This is a different Gene Simmons. It's Ronald Gene Simmons. Walked into a law firm in Russellville, Arkansas, and shot dead a receptionist who he was infatuated with, but who had spurned his advances. Come on.
Oh, Ronald.
None of us like rejection, but you can't just go around shooting people in the head. Get over it.
Yeah.
Then he went into the office of an oil company and shot two executives, killing one and injuring the other. He then drove to a convenience store and a former place of work and shot two more people, both of whom would survive. Finally, he would do the same. Sorry, go on.
Did all of these other people reject him as well? Is he just
I think he just
on
got
like
on
a mission
bit of a...
to.
I don't think so. I think Jesus. He just found his groove. I think he was just like, I'm going to go to
he
all
just
the
found
places
his
I know and just shoot them up because,
I'm in a groove.
It was just on one.
It's like when they say never walk away from the table when you're in a groove. He's like, wow, I can't stop now. I'm in a groove.
I've got more bullets in this gun.
Do some other ones. Yeah. Jesus.
Finally, he would do the same at the Woodline Motor Freight Company, shooting and wounding a woman. He then sat down and waited for police to arrest him. So... groove over, I guess. The killing spree, unsurprisingly, rocked the state, but the murders were merely a bookend to Simmons' evil festive period. 6 days previously, he had shot and strangled his wife, two sons, and four daughters.
My lord.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But it doesn't end there. Simmons then sat in his house among the bodies for 4 days. Leaving only once to visit a local bar.
Wow. That's fucking grim.
I mean, yeah. On Boxing Day, nine more relatives turned up to visit the Simmons family, including Ronald Simmons' grandchildren. All of them were killed. In total, he took 16 people's lives that Christmas.
Jesus Christ.
He was having a really bad Christmas.
He was not having a good Christmas. He really wasn't. And he had a very smelly house on top of that as well because,
oh God, can
he
you
move the bodies. Blech. Yeah, that's...
That's a bit much. On the 25th of June 1990, then Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton signed Simmons' execution warrant and he was killed by a lethal injection quite rightly so, you may say.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree.
That whole thing, that's got to be some sort of like mental switch flip, right? Like normal dude, and then one day, boom, whole family dead, and then extended family dead, and then random people.
Yeah.
Like when you think about it in the sense that he's killed his entire family and he's killed like his extended family, the fact that he then kind of went, do you know what? That fucking bitch that spurned my advances once. I might as well pop her off as well because, you know, it's not getting any worse.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if something had been built up and then just one day it just, you know, something switched in his head. I don't know. But that's insane.
No. Just not a very nice man. Didn't have the same creative outlet that the legend Gene Simmons did, clearly. But we are halfway through our countdown of Christmas murders, Dom, and all of this gore and blood is making me thirsty. So shall we take a little break?
That sounds good. I agree.
Yes, let's. You take a break. Have a eggnog. Actually, no.
This is Did Not Need to Know. I'm Jenna.
And I'm Danielle.
I love true crime.
And I hate it.
We are sisters, and this is a comedy true crime podcast where I scare Danielle every week with stories that she did not need to know.
Follow us to listen.
Did Not Need to Know, streaming everywhere, released on Mondays. We are on Instagram at Did Not Need to Know and Facebook and Twitter at DNNTK Podcast. Bye.
Hello, Twisted Humans. Do you find yourself wanting to know more about the latest murder, conspiracy, cults, or haunting? Then this is the podcast for you. We're bringing the most intense stories that'll keep you up at night. He was found guilty of voluntary manslaughter and felonious assault, but he was only sentenced to 5 months of probation, and this would be the last time that anyone ever saw him. There are allegedly two women who also drowned in the first class pool.
Was this the same glowing green that they had seen in the darkness the night before?
He had refused to sit near the wagon cloth because of stains on it, which were most likely blood. Join us every Tuesday for a glass of wine or sangria and a dose of true crime. I'm Alicia.
And I'm Sierra. And this is
Twisted and Uncorked.
Welcome back, friends, to this first festive episode of Horror House. Dom, how you doing? How you feeling? Have I put the spirit of Christmas in you so far?
Yes.
That sounded
because
weird.
Nothing gets me going on Christmas. Nothing more than murder. These are good. We were talking during the break, and I mentioned that I only really heard of the Ramsey case. Because we've covered that on a dedicated episode. But I hadn't heard of any of the other ones so far. We've talked, like, they've been insane, but so far the Father Christmas with the flamethrower is my just absolute WTF one. That's madness.
It's quite the visual, I think. It's a tough one to get out of your head. Yeah, understandable. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I don't know if I'm going to be able to match that visual in the second half, but we'll certainly be able to give it a go. We've got 6 more days of Christmas murder to count down.
Oh, yes.
Are you ready to dive back in with number 7?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Give me more murders. Give me all the murders.
Whoop. Search for missing Bristol woman turns into hunt for her killer. Joanna Yates's disappearance a week before Christmas in 2010. Made local news in Bristol almost immediately. Soon, the search and appeal broadened, and her whereabouts were of national interest. On Christmas Day, her body was found in the snow 3 miles from her home. The case achieved notoriety for the media's handling of the first suspect, Joanna's eccentric landlord, Christopher Jeffries. Hounded and effectively labelled the murderer without any sort of real proof, the UK tabloids The Mirror and The Sun were later found guilty of contempt of court for their poor coverage. Jeffries was later vindicated when Mrs. Yates Dutch neighbor, Vincent Tabak, was arrested and charged with her murder. I sort of remember this. I don't know if you do, Dom.
No. Doesn't ring.
Yeah, I kind of remember his... I was probably 20 when this was going on. And, oh, I've given away my age there. Exactly what I was trying not to do at the start of the episode. And I do remember the Sun printing stuff about this guy, because I can still picture his face. And I think there's... I'd have to look into what it's called. If anyone knows, you know, leave it in the comments. But I think there's a program on Netflix about Christopher Jeffreys, because basically he was just... Okay. Everyone just thought he was a murderer. There was no evidence whatsoever. Obviously, he wasn't the murderer. So there was no evidence. There was no, like, proof. But the tabloids in the UK just went after him. And because he looked a bit...
Of course, yeah.
What's the word that I'm looking for here? Creepy?
Yeah, like a typical murdery, you know, you look at him and you're like, oh yeah, he's probably killed someone.
If
slimy.
I was walking alone and he was following me, I would be a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I probably, as a police officer, would want to check his hard drive. Sort of person. But he wasn't a murderer, obviously. And everyone in the tabloids just decided that he was and went after him and was just like, okay, well, that's, you know, how we're going to paint him, end of story. So his life was essentially ruined by this, and all he'd really done was, I mean, given the poor woman a place to live, he was just their landlord and that was it.
Yeah.
My
Galaxy Watch has told me it's time to get moving. Sat down for too long, apparently.
Clearly. It's time to get moving, because you have been talking about murder for a worrying amount of time.
I'm legit getting fucking... I'm getting attacked by my own watch. My watch just told me you're a lazy fuck. Get moving.
If you just, like, you know, wiggle your wrist a bit, don't put that in the edit. It'll think you're moving.
Yeah. I mean, I'll do that off camera. I won't do that on camera.
Yeah, please, you know. In your own time, when we're not recording.
I don't want us to get a community guideline strike before we even get monetized on YouTube. That won't work out very well.
There's a different kind of tube for that sort of video.
It doesn't surprise me that happened, like, because so often tabloids will run with a story to get clicks and, you know, to try and be the first to break a story which doesn't actually have any evidence behind it. That doesn't shock me. Unfortunately, it's especially, you know, the Sun of all newspapers.
I mean, it's definitely not a newspaper that I would trust to get my news from. But when, you know, people are seeing his face, and it was two newspapers as well, like when they're seeing his face all over it, it's hard to ignore. Not very nice. Which brings us on to day 8 of Murder Christmas, or Christmas Murders, or I don't even know how
Murdery Christmas
this now.
Christmas meet Christmassy murders.
Murdermas, whatever.
Murdermas. Oh, that's good.
Murdermas. I like it. We'll stick with it. Which is a grim gift left under the Christmas tree. When 37-year-old Patty White offered down on her luck Michelle O'Dowd a place to stay over the festive period, Michelle was delighted at the Christmas spirit being shown to her. But White had an ulterior motive. One that involved stealing all of her new housemates' credit cards, killing her, and leaving her among a trashed Christmas tree to look like a bungled burglary.
Sneaky.
Nice of her, right? What a stand-up woman.
Yeah.
The scene was discovered by Michelle's twin brother, Phil, who went to check in on her after she failed to show up for work. There, amongst a pile of wrapped Christmas presents, he saw his sister's foot.
Patty White had beaten and strangled the 67-year-old and left her among the gifts. She would later receive a 45-year sentence from a South Carolina judge for the vile crime.
Damn.
What?
She got whacked with a hefty prison sentence. Jesus.
Yeah, are you surprised? Can you imagine if you walked in on Christmas morning, you saw the lovely scene, your beautiful Christmas tree with all the gifts wrapped underneath it, and there underneath is your severed twin sister's foot. Like, that's going to put a down on Christmas, isn't it?
She obviously got decorating lessons from, who is that guy I covered? He would, like, dissolve bodies in acid, and he, like, was it John Hay? Like,
John
he
Hay,
left
the acid
loads of evidence. Yeah, he left loads of evidence because he thought that he was untouchable, and he left behind like a foot or something, and he got himself caught. Obviously,
when you said about it being in the house, I thought you were going Ed Gein, because he liked a few souvenirs, didn't he?
No. But yeah, obviously took decoration lessons from John Hay. Just thought, let's leave out a foot. Why not?
Yeah, stunning. It reminds me of that bit. Have you seen Midsommar?
Parts of it. I don't think I've watched it all the way through.
Oh, yeah. There's a bit in that where, well, I won't tell you, but there's a bit with a foot. Anyone that's seen it, you know the bit I'm talking about. We are on number, I think, 9? Hang on.
What? I think so.
No, we're on 10. 10. Oh. Number 10.
No more. Okay.
On the 10th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me, well, a bashed in skull and a stab in the face. Awkward.
Nice.
Couple stab man in face, bash in his skull, and set light to him on Christmas Day in Kill Bill plot.
Holy hell, that's...
And other such sentences.
Not how I would want to spend my Christmas Day, personally.
Me neither. I'd rather not have my face bashed in on Christmas. Or any day. If anyone's taking notes, I just don't want it. Thank you, though. In Victoria, Australia, on Christmas Day 2013. It should have been a nice, happy day. You know, anywhere in the world, it should be a nice, happy day. But instead of spending the day with his loved ones, William Bill Stevenson pays the ultimate price for keeping poor company as his so-called friends. Meth addicts Danielle Kerr and Darren Lewis decided that they would kill him in one of the most violent possible ways conceivable. Their motives were not entirely clear, shockingly enough, when it comes to addicts. But the pair drove Stevenson out to bushland and began beating him about the head with a large rock. Kerr then stabbed the man to death while cackling about their, quote, Kill Bill plans. The couple then set the car alight and casually walked home. Thankfully, they would both be arrested during that walk, charged and convicted very soon.
Good. How long did they get?
I don't know. I haven't got that as part of my notes. But hopefully a long time, because that is not a very good reason to kill someone.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to go there, Dom, because, you know, at this point, I think it's expected of me. Not the most efficient way to kill someone, right?
No.
If you're driving them out to bushland and you've got a knife, why bother with the large rock? It's just no need.
Yeah.
If you cave someone's head in with a rock, why would you then pull out a knife? They can't even see it.
I don't know.
What's the point?
No, maybe they wanted to drag it out, I guess, and maybe just cause the most amount of pain possible by caving his face in. I don't know.
Maybe he just forgot he had it, like halfway through the bash, and he was like, oh shit, I've got a knife.
Yeah.
Bugger.
He was so in the zone with his fucking rock bashing, he just completely forgot about the knife.
In the zone being cracked out on meth, but yeah.
Yeah.
Easily forgettable.
In the meth zone.
In that situation. In the meth zone.
In the meth
zone. Oh, dear. But yeah, needless to say, not a particularly nice way to go.
No, especially...
Will Stevenson.
especially when you're in Australia, like Christmas is there, you know, beach weather, you know,
yeah,
t-shirt, shorts, barbecues, like, my God, that'd be a
right. That might sound like a really thin line for some of our listeners outside of the UK, but weather really matters to us in the UK. And I can guarantee that I can find you cases where people have decided not to kill because it's been sunnier. So if you're winding up a British person and it's raining, you might want to rethink your choices.
Yes.
On the 11th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me an axe in the face. In 2017, James Hutchinson pleaded guilty to killing his pregnant partner during a rampage while on drugs.
Oh, no.
He reportedly attacked Nicola Woodman at her home with knives and then an axe on Christmas Day. Hutchinson was reportedly in a drug-induced delusion and believed Nicola had been cheating on him and was going to kill him as a result of cheating on him. She was a mother of two and was pregnant with his child at the time.
Oh, that's rough.
I think if the last two have told us that anything, it's don't take drugs, kids.
Yeah, I was literally about to be like, so kids, this is why you don't do drugs.
What have we learned? As it turns out, dear, I can't count. And that actually was number 9. And I've gotten confused.
Oh.
No, wait, that was number 10. That was number 10. This is number 11. Okay. The, quote, marvelous teen gang indulge in sickening festive killing spree. There were four of them, and they called themselves the Downtown Posse. The police and courts, though, they were simply Laura Taylor, who was 16 years old, DeMarcus Smith, who was 17, Heather Matthews, who was 20, and Marvelous Keane, actual name, who was 19, hence the marvelous. Between Christmas Eve and Boxing Day in 1992, the gang went on a murder spree in Dayton, Ohio, that would see 5 innocent people die and 4 seriously injured. Led by Keane, who was one of the older two of the group by much, but a little bit older, the gang's primary motive was robbery. As you can imagine, for teenagers, they're generally a bit of extra cash. But things soon got out of hand as Marvelous Keane grew paranoid about snitches and effectively turned the holiday season into hunting season. For his central role in what would then be dubbed the Christmas killing, Keane would go on to become the 10,000th American convict to be executed since the death penalty was reinstated back in 1976, while his cohorts would receive life sentences.
Okay. I'm assuming it was lethal injection.
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't got that written down. But yeah, the 10,000th American convict to be executed since the death penalty was reinstated. I think that's quite the... I wonder if he got a prize. You know, when you walk into like the Apple store and you're like the 100 cops. I wonder if he got something fun or if he just...
What, just before... Know,
got sent to hell instead.
Just before the... If he did get a lethal injection, which I'm assuming he did, because I'm pretty sure at that point, like lethal injection was kind of the go-to, wasn't it?
I think so.
Do you reckon?
I think electric chair and lethal injection are the only ones they still use. I think.
Yeah. Do you reckon like just as the drugs are about to take hold, then they were like, oh shit. By the way, you're the 10,000th person to be executed. Congrats. Yeah. Congrats. Should we send the plaque to your family?
I don't know if this helps at all as you know, make your journey to the underworld. But you are the 10,000th person we've done this to, so... You can take that with you. That might buy you a drink in hell.
We'll put you in the Guinness World Records. Not that matters at all to you because you're dead, but yeah.
Because you won't be there to see it. What a shame.
And finally, on the 12th day of Christmas, we received 5 missing children.
Oh,
and
wow.
A case.
What a one to end on.
What a one to end on.
Bloody
but
hell.
But one that you should be familiar with, Dom, because I started our Christmas countdown with a case that I had covered, and I'm ending it with a case that you have covered. It is 5 children. But what case do you know, Dom, where 5 children go missing, never to be found, that happened on Christmas Eve in 1945? God. Come on, Donna, I'm testing you. Don't let me down. You got this.
The Sodder family.
Boom, Sodder children. Christmas Eve. I think you probably, because we didn't cover it at Christmas, maybe you forgot or nugget. But Christmas Eve, 1945.
Probably, the absolutely craziness of that case. The date kind of just slipped my mind.
I think that's true of a lot of things, to be fair. Like, I remembered the JonBenet Ramsey was over Christmas because it was obviously waking up Boxing Day to find her. I didn't know this, so I'll let you off. I'll let you off for getting that. But Christmas Eve 1945, a massive fire in West Virginia ripped through the home of Italian immigrants George and Jenny Sodder and their 9 children. 4 of their children survived, but the bodies of the other 5 were never found. One of the siblings, Sylvia, who escaped her parents, told The Independent that she was not convinced that her siblings died in the horrific Christmas Eve fire. There was some speculation that the disappearance of the Sodder children was connected to Italian mob activity, which I believe we covered in our episode as well. George Sodder was a vocal critic of Benito Mussolini, the then fascist government of Italy as well. So there could have been a motive behind. Such criticism of Mussolini could have likely angered a lot of Italians, maybe wanted to see harm come to him. The family never gave up hope that their children were alive, even offering cash rewards, but the 5 missing children were never.
Yes. It's going to sound bad when I say it's one of my favorite cases. It's my favorite case in the context that there's so many things that are just like weird about it. There's the I think it was the salesman that was like, your house is going to go up in flames, and you know, the ladder being moved, and the engine being taken out of the car, and yeah, just so many things about that case are just like, whoa, what the hell.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very weird one. And the I can't remember if it was one of the other children or a witness that mentioned something about someone leading children into the woods nearby. That bit always stuck with me as well. But if you're not familiar with the Sodder case, do go back and listen to our episode.
Please do.
I remember us thinking afterwards, wow, we've spoken about this for a long time, but it's because there are so many red herrings and just little things about that case that are so baffling no idea, and still no idea, you know, what happened to the 5 Sodder children. It's a fascinating case, so, you know, go back and have a listen if you want.
And absolutely. And hopefully you'll get as frustrated as we will when you come to the part where the fire chief couldn't actually operate the fire engine.
Oh, God, and I forgot about whole, that.
Like,
yeah,
the whole system where, like, one, they had to, like, call each other. Like, it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
It's an insane case. It's either they're the unluckiest family to ever have lived, or there was something fishy going on. But either way, fascinating. Yeah. So, yeah, go back, have a little listen to that case.
Absolutely.
But thus concludes our 12 murders of Christmas.
proving beyond anything that Christmas should be about, you know, love, family, staying together, you know, spending time with your loved ones. But if you do find that you really can't stand them, then just kill them, because then at least we've got, you know, content for next year's episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Just give us content. That's what we want.
Nothing
that
else
doesn't
matters.
Give any of my friends a free pass to like kill people. But I'm just saying, people that I don't know. If you want to be mentioned on the podcast, then, you know, maybe get a really bad present and then go off.
Unisex shoes and the sun.
Unisex shoes.
Page 3 calendar. I hear work quite well. Awesome. Dom, happy Christmas, mate. Do you want to see us out?
Yes. Thank you for listening, everybody. And like we said, if you're listening after the 25th of December, Merry Christmas. Hope you had a lovely Christmas filled with lots of food, lots of drink, lots of food comas, and some nice gifts as well. You know, it's always nice to get some nice gifts. And also, because we love you, we appreciate you. And to make up for the fact that when I started the podcast, I didn't do a Christmas special. And last year, we didn't do a Christmas special. This is part one of our two-part Christmas special. And in fact, we are recording part two after this recording. And I'm very excited to talk about it. I'm not going to give away too much, but I'm going to be talking about the anti-Saint Nicholas. Who only concerns himself with the naughty children. So just make sure you're good. Otherwise, you might get a visit from this creature. But until next week, you're going to have to wait to find out who that is. But as for this week's episode, thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed. If you would like to support us, there are many, many ways that you can support us. You can follow us on Instagram at horrorhouse_pod. We are now over 1,000 followers, which is exciting. Yes. You can also follow us on your podcast app of choice, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all of that jazz. You can leave us a rating on Spotify. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or the website. Either one of those will do. And you can also subscribe to the YouTube channel. Please do. We would like to grow that community. So if you want to, you know, see us as well as hear us, then subscribe. We would love to have you. If you would like to support us financially, there is the Buy Me a Coffee link. You will know what that is. We're not going to bore you to death with that. And there's also the merch store. The 50% off store-wide does come to an end soon. So the end of December, it will go back to normal service, but it's always going to be free shipping. So that's going to stay. So if you'd like to support us financially and get some merch, please do. I am rocking the hoodie and I have been living in it. Because it is very cozy. I'm not just saying that. Amy will attest as well. And Mama Brown will attest as well. It is a very comfy hoodie.
Shit cozy.
So until next time, all that's left to say from me is, as always, stay festive and stay spooky.
Stay spooky! Yeah, we should probably shouldn't encourage people to kill their families at Christmas.
Yeah, maybe not. To be honest, I didn't know that, like, there's so many murders around Christmas. I probably,
there's so
it's
many.
Probably shouldn't be that surprising. but there are so many. Wow.
I always thought Valentine's Day was like, you know, the day, but apparently everyone gets in the mood at Christmas, so who knows?
Yeah. Like, you would think Valentine's Day and Halloween would be the murdery holidays, I suppose.
Yeah. Halloween gets a bad rap.
But, yeah, I know. Halloween is superior to Christmas. I'm sorry, I know it's a Christmas episode. But it is.
Just is. Better.